I'm glad to deliver this talk today. And so my talk, today present my work together with Amit Molasek from my IBM research, and it will be about what I think very easy but powerful technique, which is called hypermobility, an application to quantum systems, and it's very useful for finding phase transition, quantum phase transition points. And let me tell about this technique a little bit more. And so my talk will consist of three parts. First is I will just make a brief introduction into quantum phase transition, how to use spectrum to define quantum phase transition. And the second part, I will just explain a little bit about methods, about the probability theory, and how it can be useful to find the spectrum of Hamiltonian. And at the very end, I will talk a little bit about the artificial quantum matter and how technique can be used to explain what's going on with artificial quantum matter and presence of solar. I will make some pauses, so you are free to ask questions. I will be happy to answer.
Is there a way to turn the volume on a little bit higher?
Volume on a little bit?
Okay. Let's see.
Do you hear me now better, or?
It's a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Now.
Okay.
Do you hear me
now
better?
Now it's better.
Okay. Now it's better. Great. Okay. So I will start from quantum phase transitions, and this transition happening in their temperature, and similar to the thermal phase transition happening due to thermal fluctuations with the increase of temperature. Quantum phase transition happen at zero temperature and can be described by Hamiltonian you see on the screen. And here H is a Hamiltonian of the system. H1 is a Hamiltonian of system in phase one. H2 is a Hamiltonian system in phase two. And G is a dimensionless parameter, which fit from zero to one. And phase Hamiltonian H will be dependent on this parameter G, which typically can represent magnetic field or doping or pressure or anything else. And there is a transition happening at some critical point, G equal GC. And it's very interesting sometimes to find what the point of phase transition, because it's very relevant for many types of transition, like second order phase transition between superconductor and normal metal, or more recently, some topological phase transition between Hamiltonians with different topological invariants. And to define the phase transition is typically useful to analyze the spectrum of the system. And if you look on the single particle spectrum or quasi-particle, the typical spectrum of the Hamiltonian H will have this form. So on the y-axis is energy, on x-axis is G parameter, and color defines the density of state. And you can see easily that there are black regions corresponding to null states, and if you at zero temperature and some your fermions electrons fill the system up to some fermi energy, the black region defines you the spectral gap in your energy to use to excite the system. And basically, at the point of phase transition, this gap should vanish, as you see here at 0.0.5, and therefore finding the spectrum will be very very helpful to find the point phase transition, as well as some properties phase transition like critical exponents. And typically, it's a very hard problem, especially if there is a disorder present in the system or you need to encounter the factor of interaction. Therefore, this problem is extensively studied for a couple of last decades using perturbation theory, setting G as a small parameter, or like deorganization or quantum Monte Carlo and some variational methods, which better approximations than deorganization. However, can work for larger systems than deorganization. However, in most cases, these methods not universal, and for some systems they fail to find out the quantum phase transition point, and therefore sometimes it's useful to analyze just integrable models like transfer sizing model and then add some layer of interaction there. However, the number of such models is very small. And for today, I want to show you that there is a whole class of non-integrable models for which finding the gap is also easy. And this type of phase transition relies on a property of Hamiltonian H1, H2, which appear in the first slide. And this property is called free independence. So if the matrices are freely independent, you may find the density of states or the matrix without solving the full problem using free probability theory. And in the next part, I will try to explain very, I hope, user-friendly what is free probability theory and how it can be used to find the spectrum. So to introduce free probability theory, which is until now is more pretty more mathematical than physical science, I would like to first use intuition from conventional probability theory, which is what I call classical probability theory. And to do that, I just consider a very simple problem. Assume in a conventional probability theory, I have two random variables, P1 and P2, which has distributions P1 and P2. And I would like to find what the distribution P of the sum E. And that can be found easily if you assume that P1 and P2 are two random variables, independent random variables. And in this case, P is just a conventional convolution of P1 and P2. And you can find this P is use characteristic function. So you make a calculate characteristic function for P1, for P2, and use the additivity of logarithms of characteristic function to find P. And free probability theory just generalized that for case of not random variables, but random matrices. So now let's consider the problem we posed at the beginning. So we have two matrices, H1 and H2, which have density of states R1 and R2, and we are interested in the density of states rho of their sum H. And in full analogy with the conventional probability theory, it can be done if H1 and H2 are freely independent. And in this case, the density of states is given just free convolution of density of states R1 and R2. And in order to find the free convolution, you may use additivity of R-transforms instead of characteristic function. And this is a key feature, so this is pretty much a definition of free convolution. So the question is, what is free independence and what is R-transform? And in the next couple of slides, I will try to explain what they are and how it's different from conventional probability theory. So I will call two Hamiltonians to be freely independent if there is some complex correlation function vanishes, which involves these two Hamiltonians. And here you'll see that tilde is a generalization of covariation function for Hamiltonians. And brackets here are also the just averaging over all possible realization of random matrices. At the same time, K1, M1, K2, M2, Kn, Mn are some positive powers. And the two matrices will be free if this condition satisfied for any amount of any positive k's and m's. And this pretty much generalization of vanishing of covariance function conventional probability theory. And for a long time, this pre-independence was studied in connection to Wigner random matrices. So with either H1 or H2, or both of them are Wigner random matrices, then you may use that energies and eigenstates of random matrices are not correlated, and that the two eigenstates of matrix 1 and eigenstate matrix 2 then will have very small overlap. You can prove that this condition satisfies for any case and any M's. However, our contribution is here that we found that basically this condition. Yeah, sure. Question?
Sorry. So you want this to be true even without taking the dimension of H to infinite, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We need to take... So this is, of course, only when dimension of h is going to infinite. So this is asymptotic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the question. Yeah, so... And our contribution that we found that basically the class of matrices is much larger than just Wigner random matrices. It includes some relevant physical matrices. And probably the simplest example of that is actually a transfer Titan model, which is one of the most widely used models in theoretical physics. So I assume we have Hamiltonian, as we saw in the first slide, which has sigma x interaction between spins, and it also has a magnetic field, and the system is exactly solvable, and you can show that it exhibits transition from paramagnetic phase if the x interaction means, and paramagnetic phase if the interaction means. And to analyze the system, this Hamiltonian from pre-probability perspective, you need to first go to make a Jordan-Wigner transformation and look into the effect of elementary excitations or particles, and this spectrum has the form you see on the second line. It also has two parts. First part corresponds to kinetic energy, where r is the position of a particle, and tau is a tau x, tau y, tau z are just Pauli matrices corresponding to particle hole, so that particle can be superposition of particle and hole. And the second part is the potential energy, it's a version of Z, and the two, as well as sigma x, compete to sigma z. These two terms compete to each other, converting the system from one behavior to another. It might be shown that this Hamiltonian is actually the sum of two free Hamiltonians. And for that, we need just take into account the first, the Hamiltonian H1 and Hamiltonian H2 are Hamiltonians which have eigenvalues plus minus one. And therefore, H1 square is equal to H2 square, just equal to identity matrix. And this means that automatically, in this complicated correlator, all the even powers just automatically vanish, mathematically push this correlator to zero. And if all of them are odd, then if you see from the third line, this trace will be just H1, H2 to the power n. And by multiplying H1 to H2, you can easily show that any power of n will be the sum of some projector times upper diagonal matrix, plus projector times lower diagonal matrix. It's also traceless. And as a result, H1, H2, even without average over disorder, anything to so two deterministic matrices fully satisfy the three independent conditions. And that means that we can use them to calculate the density of states, which I will do in the next slide. So any questions?
But so here you're not taking like a random ensemble, just
So you may think about this. So basically, in future, we'll deal with random ensemble. So this is a very tall example, and you may think about instead of this ensemble as a random matrices with just distribution delta function like distribution, which is has only one matrix in this ensemble, which is fine. And typically, of course, if you want to look at Wigner random matrices, you need to take into account the averaging over ensemble. So now I can use the method, the additivity of our transform to calculate the density of state, but we're keep in mind that formulas can be used for any three independent matrices. So first of all, I need to compute the quantity, which is I call trace Green's function, or if you're more from mathematical side, you may call that Cauchy transform. And this is connected to density of states of matrix H1, for example. And in this case, since H1 has eigenvalues plus minus one, it has pretty simple form shown in the second line. So first term corresponds to plus 1 eigenvalues and second term corresponds to minus 1 eigenvalues. And in the second step, I just compute the outcomes form. And here, the expression you see on the next line is just a definition of outcomes form. So you might think this is outcomes form by construction is equal to this expression. And inverse here means the functional inverse of G. So you need to express, if you look on the second line, you need to express Z in terms of G and invert the function. And for that, you need to solve quadratic equation. And once you do that, you'll get the answer in the form you see in the first line. And of course, when you do a function inverse, excuse me?
No question.
Maybe people's question, I didn't get you.
Nobody was saying anything, keep going.
Okay, sure, absolutely. So there are two plus minus sign, which corresponds to two branches of solution, and we need to take only one, which has a plus sign. And the third step, R transform, we may compute the R transform matrix H by summing R transform matrix H1 and GH1 and 1 is minus GH2. And that can be done just easily. Since H1 and H2 also have, they have some eigenvalues, you can just combine the expression for step two. Okay, so next three steps is just a reverse of this three steps. So once you have R transform matrix H, you may calculate inverse of Green's function, compute the expression on the first line, then compute, make a functional inverse again, find the Green's function as function of complex variable. And the sixth last step, you may calculate density of states, just taking imaginary part of trace of Green's function. And you arrive at the expression you see at the bottom, which you may verify is exactly the expression for density of states for transfer sizing model. And you may see it on the right, where y-axis is energy and x-axis parameter g, and you solve it at the very beginning. So at the conclusion, you might say, well, there is a way to compute the density of states without solving cool problem if we can prove that two matrices in compound are freely independent. And this works only for transfer sizing model. You may find out many less relevant, but also physical models where this satisfied. However, the question is basically, can I use it for something more usable?
Sorry. Maybe before you move on, yeah. Maybe I missed something. Can you go back one slide?
Yes. Here?
So H1 is some hopping term, right?
Yes. So H1 is what you see in the slide.
So if it's hopping term naively, why should it square to 1? Shouldn't this eigenvalue span a circle?
Because you have this tau z plus I tau y construction in Nambu space. So basically, if you take H1 square, you'll find out that the only term which left is a cross term, because tau z plus I tau y square is just zero. It's
okay. Yeah. Okay.
So the thing which makes this matrix free is basically the structure in this auxiliary space or Nambu space.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. And so when I demonstrated that this is physics, so now I went on this method that has a relation to the physical Hamiltonians, and you can rely on a fit robot theory. Let me move on problem which I will call Hamiltonian error analysis. So to consider the Hamiltonian, this is a form we assumed at the very beginning. We have Hamiltonian sum of two terms. And H null now at some idealized Hamiltonian, which we would like to simulate, we would like to obtain, for example, in some system, might be experimental system, it might be a topological insulator or a topological superconductor or something which has a gap and we would like to see an experiment. And lambda v is some error or something which some disorder which spoils the phase. It might be it's added to the system and it might be originate from disorder. It might be originate from correction cutting coming from interactions, so real part of self-energy. It also might be something coming to from coupling to environmental mode. And if this transfer disorder is very strong, this term may close the gap and induce a transition from phase of Hamilton H null to some featureless phase associated with this random term, which basically have no other parameter or topological invariance. We are very interested to find out what the critical value of lambda. The problem typical, we don't know anything about V. V is to simulate to emulate this problem, we need to simulate some environment or simulate some disorder and then compute it typically numerically, which is extensive work. And for free probability is this task is much simpler. So once we assume that H null and V are two freely independent matrices, then everything we need to know is just density of state H null and V. And this density of states can give you a whole bunch of answers. For example, what is the gap behaviors in the system? What are critical points where the gap closes in Hamiltonian H null? What the critical exponents? And what happens with surface states if H null has surface states? And I will just show how to do that for a particular choice of density of state.
One question. So when you say you want the density of state for H0 and V to be known, is it sufficient if I just know the density of state at low energy, or do I have to know the density of state for the entire spectrum?
Yeah, so I'm talking now about the low excitation. So if assume we know the density of state which of elementary excitation of quasi-particles of H0, and all my talk I would be talking about a low energy spectrum.
Sorry, I didn't quite get that. So is it sufficient if I only know the low energy density of state? Suppose I only care about the low energy density of state of the final Hamiltonian. Then do I have to know the complete density of state of H0 and V separately, or is it enough to if I just know the density of state of them at low energy?
Yeah, you may know the density of state for H0 at low energy, but for V, you need some more information.
Oh, okay.
So basically, but as I showed in first, you may not try to find the density of state to V explicitly because we may just estimate it somehow, and this is a power method basically. So
okay.
Assume we look at H null, which has low energy of states approximated as a BCS like dependence. So we assume that density of state H null is given by two parameters. Where here rho null is the density of state everywhere else except of the vicinity of zero, and delta null is the gap. So right here, the only thing that instead of d null you should have rho null there. And this is density of states which you expect from superconductors or chiral material, in some small gap chiral material. And for V, it's more complicated. We don't know the density of state of V because of typical disorder, but we may assume that it's some bounded spectrum having some form of semicircle law, which, and this is convenient because we know that if V is a Wigner random metric, this it always will be free to free with H null. But however, it may not be exactly Wigner metrics, maybe some other metrics. And then we just approximate the density of state in a circle law. So basically now we take all the parameters, we only have three parameters of the problem, rho null, delta null, lambda, and this is enough to define the phase transition So if you look on the top of the slide, you see on the left the dependence of density of states is a function of a parameter lambda. And if the lambda equals zero, we have a gap Hamiltonian, so we have a gap. And once you increase the lambda, you'll see that gap starts closing gradually until it's finally closes at some lambda critical. And you may find the dependence of the gap as well as critical point in terms of delta null and rho null. And this very useful formula, I just say that, well, okay, if delta null, for example, in some elliptic system is 10 milli electron volts, and density of state is typically one over bandwidth is like one electron volt, then the lambda critical will be around 100 milli electron volts. So that the lambda might be much, much larger than the gap to destroy the phase, which is I think is a basically very, very strong result, and this is also an analytical result as well. And the power in the delta dependence of gap this function of lambda is also give you some constriction on the critical exponents. So if you z is a dynamical critical exponent and you use a critical exponent, then for any free phase quantum phase transition or free matrices, it must satisfy the condition on the bottom of the slide, while the particular value for Z, particular value for nu will depend on the matrices, more details on that. And you may summarize the result of the free probability just a phase diagram on the top. So red region is the gap phase and blue region is the gapless phase. And depending on lambda and delta, initial gap and the particular parameter, you might be one phase or another phase when you get a prediction. So for the last step, before I go to practical applications, I will just show you what's going on with the surface states in this problem. And to do that, we need to slightly modify the problem. You need to consider the density of states of matrix H as a sum of bulk states, which has, again, the BCS form we considered before. And then you add the surface states. And typical surface states have a negligibly small contribution to density of states. Typically, it's one over size of the system. In this problem, I just consider one surface state because I may neglect the influence of the density of states on each other in this problem. And once I use this correction, I introduce this correction, my density of states after free probability will also have similar form. So density of states for the bulk plus something, some one over L correction, which has its own delta function with the energy shown on the lower part of the slide as a function of lambda. And important feature that if initial energy was on zero, and at zero, it always stays at zero. And once if energy of surface state is somewhere away from the gap, from the zero energy, sorry, but lies in the gap, then it starts approaching the center. And at some point, which is some lambda s, it just merges into bulk. So there is no, and there are two conclusions. First of all, that in free probability theory, does not predict any widening of levels, which is important. For example, if you keep in mind that zero energy state might be Majorana state, it's not widened, always spin to zero. And the second one is that there is no gap opening, which we want to expect from, for example, topological insulators. If we add some perturbation, which is not closed, the gap remains the edge states, or surface states, to be gapless, which is reasonable. Okay, so that's all results which predicted from free probability theory, and we might wonder which systems this result may be applied to. And we may try to apply it for just regular disorder, but before that, let me consider the system where free probability satisfies exactly. And that is related to artificial quantum matter, and that means next 5 minutes, just make a brief overview. What is this and why we're interested in it? So we live in a very interesting time, and probably in the near future, or even now, we can use many separate qubits or atoms or ions or photons or nuclear spins to gather together into some systems. And these systems can emulate them, if you say you will isolate the system, they can emulate the behavior of large scale of quantum objects or quantum phases. And of course, first ingredient to create such quantum simulators is isolation from environment, but also important ingredient of simulation is basically ability to manipulate the interaction between qubits. And one of the powerful tools to modulate interaction between spins or qubits is to use a time periodic Hamiltonian. And let me briefly explain how to do that. So first, you need to take into account that if you have Hamiltonian with a periodic field, you may look at the system as a static system. If you look on the evolution of system on discrete lattice in time, in the period driving t, then you can see in the system 0t, 2t, 3t, 4t. And in this case, the system described by, you may look at the system as described by a unitary operation uf, which is called Floquet operator. And you may consider Hamiltonian called Floquet Hamiltonian hf as generator of this Floquet Hamiltonian. And this Floquet Hamiltonian has non-trivial relation between the original Hamiltonian and the field, and depending on driving period and also configuration of the time configuration of F, you may manipulate a system and create different states of matter. And one is good illustration, I think, is converting regular insulator into topological insulator. And intuition is basically very similar to classical mechanics. So if you have a pendulum, which is consists of large ball as a ball and a rigid rod connected to some axis, which allows the system to rotate and put the system in an external gravitational field, find out this pendulum will have two equilibrium points. One point if unstable equilibrium, if that pendulum shows upward, and point of stable equilibrium when pendulum shows downwards. And if you add the periodic driving to the system, you may figure out, you may create a situation when Floquet Hamiltonian will have stable position of pendulum pointing upwards instead of downwards. And this system called Kapitza pendulum. And similar trick you can basically do for Floquet topological states, for regular insulators to convert into topological insulators. For that, you may consider the system which is basically has a Fermi level at the such that electron fields the lower band, which is equivalent to a ball pointing downwards, and then apply periodic driving. And once you apply periodic driving, you may figure may create a situation when electrons now think that the lower energy band is conduction band, and they just move to conduction band. And this case is effectively band inversion, and this system will have the surface H states and or surface states and that convert into topological insulator. One example of such system is, for example, given Kitaev chain. So if you take a regular Kitaev chain and make the chemical potential to be time dependent in this problem, you may create, depending on the period of driving of mu, you may push system from topological to trivial state and from trivial to topological state. And that's very useful because typically, there is a large problem with Majorana fermions, Majorana modes in experiment that it's very hard to create a system where you reliably, after some fabrication process, you get into topological state. And then and keep this topological state in during the braiding. So, and periodic driving just give you additional degree of freedom, additional tuning to deal with this system. But once you have disorder the system, that might actually affect your system hardly. So because if you are you add some disorder, it may induce a transition from topological phase to non-topological phase because disorder closes the gap and makes the Mariana fermion to Mariana mode to hybridize with some localized bulk states. And if you look on the typical phase diagram, you will see that disorder, if you have some system in topological phase, so you have a topological chair Mariana fermion equal one, and you have disorder, you see there is a transition of some disorder. And to make just visual understanding what's going on, here the spectrum of the Mariana driven KPIF chain, it's defined periodically in energy because it's periodical in time. And this system will have two Mariana fermions. And the previous plot was about Mariana fermion zero energy. However, there is also Mariana fermions of my energy, which is very useful. But, let's consider zero energy Mariana form mode and look into the how the gap behaves when as you add the disorder, which I introduced a couple of slides ago. And you may see that basically, once you add disorder, the gap starts closing slowly until it closes completely at some point, which is equal here 0.891. And at this point, the Mariana fermion, the topological state does not survive. It transits into some disordered phase. White curve here actually the prediction of free probability theory. And you can see that free probability theory gives you very, very good estimation for the density of states. And you may ask why it happens? Why is it the case? Why disorder here behaves like random matrix? And the explanation is pretty simple. If you add the disorder to Fourier Hamiltonian, then when you add periodic driving, the original Hamiltonian goes to Fourier Hamiltonian, which is studied. But disorder also transfers to some, well, not very, some complicated corrections to the Hamiltonian, which can be defined just by this formula. And if you will try to find out the connection between disorder in Floquet system to disorder in a static system, you may find out that it can be done, can be expressed using some Taylor expansion, which comes from Magnus expansion. And the first term is Magnus expansion is just original Hamilton disorder, which might, we can choose diagonal. But other corrections basically induce next neighbor hopping, next to next neighbor hopping, and so on. So basically the whole matrix will not be, delta F will not be off diagonal matrix. And even more when this series has some radius convergence, and when you behind the radius convergence, delta VF now is much more complicated than original diagonal Hamiltonian, it behaves as random matrix. And that explains why, and if you look on the HF and delta VF, you may check numerically that this very small, for large system sizes, free independence condition is almost satisfied. So this value is very small. Though it's finite and it's not exact, but it's very close. And you may use the same trick for two-dimensional topological insulators. You may think about...
Sorry, move to two-dimension. So in this case, does that imply at all that with the driving, the transition is of a very different universality class than the static case? Because with this, in the static case, I can also imagine this transition between the KPIF chain and the trivial chain induced by disorder, right? So is this a different universality class then? Do you get different exponents? Or?
Yes, I guess the exponents will be different. So yeah. Basically, so the here the problem is typically if this period is very large, or so frequency is small, then system is not localized at all, because there is many Landau-Wiener transitions between different localized levels. So basically, if you look at the transition in static, the static disorder is just transition in localized system, while we look at here, it's basically transition in delocalized system.
I see.
That's one of the reasons why it might be sufficiently different.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so the same trick can be done for two-dimensional topology translators. So you make it to the BGT model with some inverted mass, and you make mass here to be time dependent. And in this case, you can also convert topological states into non-topological and vice versa. No, sorry, not topological, topological. And here's an example, one shot at some the spectrum at some periods of driving, you see that there is a gap, there is edge topological state in the gap, and you may see that while you have disorder, the gap is again closing, and white curve also is a prediction from the probability theory, and the white curves show you the behavior of edge states, and here they are discrete because I consider very small system size, 20 to 20, therefore I have some only limited number of surface states, and they slightly widen it, but you can see that it also approximately follow what we expect from the probability theory predicting the behavior. So probably the last part of what I discussed. Okay, so we consider that this system predicts transition in an artificial quantum manner, and the last part probably interesting is it can be approximated the phase transition in a static system, which has some disorder. And as I told before, it gives you not a good prediction for critical exponent, but it still can be good used as a qualitative approximation or what's going with the gap in the system in presence of disorder. So if you consider the lowest energy spectrum in this form, you will define the energy spectrum of the particles and some kind of superconductor coupling in the disorder. And you look what's going on for different models. So for example, for Anderson insulator, when the delta is equal to zero, the density of state for free problem for numerical simulation is shown by blue, and for free convolution is given by orange. So you see that they give you numerically, qualitatively good results predicting the density of state. So it was like interested, for example, in such quantities such as thermal capacity or something like that, you will be able to use the probability just to estimate the parameters for systems. And that might also might work for one-dimensional disorder chiral superconductor. And you can see that this case, the probability give you some probabilistic formula for which approximates the gap for superconductor, even if there is no exactly independent condition. So let me make a summary of the talk. So I discussed the class of easily solvable quantum phase transition, which I call free quantum phase transition. And in those phase transitions, you may find the gap exactly based on free independence condition between two matrices. And if this condition can be exact, for example, in transfer sizing model, and it can be approximate, so depending on the problem you used to, and it can give you estimation for gap phase transition point. And if you want to read more about it, you may look into our paper published in Physics and Letters, and I will be happy to answer your questions if you have any right now. Thank you very much.
Uh, So at the beginning, you mentioned you've an example like a non-integrable model where you use this free probability technique.
May I explain, please, again? May I ask you?
Yes, I think in the beginning you mentioned some special non-integrable class that you apply your free probability technique to. So which class is this?
So this class is really non-integrable in the sense that you may not able to find exactly all the eigenstates and eigenvalues. So the only quantity which you can estimate using free probability theory is just density of state. While the details of spectrum may be not available for some analytic solution. Therefore, that's why I call that non-integrable models. However, in the sense that you can find the quantum phase transition point, this means that it's kind of solvable.
Yeah, I see. So like, have you thought about situations where like even the clean Hamiltonian is interacting? Is there any hope of these techniques being applicable there too?
Yeah, it might be. The only example which I found exact free probability working on is a transfer sizing model and some models which are similar to transfer sizing, so TR. For example, if you have basically some Mariana models where you have three Marianas and in two terms Hamiltonian model Mariana fermions, came up with the free independent Hamiltonians to find the spectrum of the system easily. However, for interacting models, I didn't yet find any Hamiltonian which follow that exactly. But this work in progress, so I hope that probably you may try to show that some of the known models have this free independent spectrum.
So I have a question about your 2D example. Can we go back to that?
Yeah.
So that's basically a Chern insulator, right?
Yeah.
So do you have an exponent on that transition?
This transition will have the same exponent. So this is the same case what I studied here. Sorry. So this will follow the dependence.
I see. So this expression doesn't depend on dimensionality, you're saying?
It does not depend on dimensionality, so.
I see. Okay. So that is very different from the non-driving case. Okay.
Driving case is different because the periodic driving is actually mess up the disorder such that it starts being very non-local in this term. That's why it has this mixes the eigenstates in a very common way. This is the same as in 1D and 2D. Therefore, the model is not dependent on dimension.
So for this kind of problem, have people tried other ways of trying to get the exponents? Like, I don't know, replica trick or something?
I didn't find any results on particle depth. I know that there are works which studied this numerically, but I don't know any analytical work studying the system from analytical perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my claim, so yeah, I will be happy to find work and compare it to others' works. So my prediction is that if you have a periodically driven system which is driven enough, slow enough, and when I say slow enough, I mean that the corresponding Magnus expansion diverges if you try to expand by the period of driving, then all the periodically driven systems should I expect to behave more or less similar, and it has a similar critical exponents which satisfy this condition, nu equal to the house. But personally, each one of the each one z and nu separately can depend on dimension, basically. So it's, my prediction. So I remember, for example, show that if the disorder is a random matrix, then the nu will be 2 over d, which is correspond to highest and bound, and z will be 3, as I guess, 3/4, 3d over 4. But if only for exactly this v correction to be random matrix, Wigner random matrix. And once you go to some different systems with different corrections, you will get different exponents.
All right, thanks.
Any other questions?
So what do you mean by specific symmetries? Just in your summary slide.
It's good question. So if you look on, for example, transvertizing Hamiltonian, you see that if you multiply matrix H1 by matrix H2, you will get something like 1 plus sigma x times R plus 1 and 1 minus sigma x R plus 1 R. So, and that in this case, that the fact that you have H1 by H2 being always of diagonal matrix in any power is some very specific to particular this form of Hamiltonian. For example, if you add some small coefficients somewhere, for example, may add disorder to H2 or anything, this breaks. And this matrix will never be free. That I call the specific symmetry. Sorry if I confused you.
Okay.
So you need to figure out very accurately the Hamiltonian such that so that means there is no like epsilon neighborhood of the particular in the parameter space where it's satisfied. So it's always satisfied at some point of the coefficients, like here.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Wait, sorry, always. I'm so confused about the same question Chag asked at the beginning. So if I just look at the two terms in the original Pauli spin language, like ZZ and X, or XX and Z, whatever, if I just square that, I don't get one.
Yeah, so you need to look onto Bogoliubov-Degen Hamiltonian. You need to look into single particle excitation. So two sigma x, and sigma z are not free. The only what's free are Hamilton or Bogoliubov-Degen Hamiltonian. That's important. Thank you for pointing that.
That's the
same.
Okay.
So that's not the same because. If you think, for example, this is not about this example, you would think about Wigner random matrix. So Wigner random matrix can be a good approximation for a system, it will be good approximation for single particle behavior, might be good approximation, but it might be a terrible approximation for many body Hamiltonian because it involves some many particle interactions. Therefore, here, so single particle and many-body Hamiltonian are very different. And the if many-body Hamiltonian might be not field dependent, single particle can be.
Okay, I see.
My hope, so I'm studying now this type of systems. In my hope, for example, if we add interaction to the model, you may prove for some models that if you write down exact calculate exactly the self energy. You may prove that real part of self energy will be kind of free to original kinetic energy in single particles, and that will be a very powerful case for the theory. Then you may look on the quasi particles and can able to find the spectrum of quasi particles. But it's a hard problem, and it might be as a future direction for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Oz.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the talk. If you would like to talk more about this one or some perspectives of the problem or some other problem, I'll be happy to talk to you personally. Just if I know if a team sends you my email, I will be happy. I can. You might write me, and I'm happy to respond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.